Okay, folks, we're going to have to proceed with counsel. If you wouldn't mind going out into the hallway, we would appreciate it. Thank you very much. Please read the 9:45 time certain.
Item 791, authorize a grant agreement with Portland Community Media.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Portland Community Media is a nonprofit organization providing local, non-commercial, community-based media. For the past 26 years, the city has contracted with Portland Community Media to manage public educational and governmental access programming resources, including access channels such as Channel 30. Portland Community Media provides live gavel-to-gavel television coverage of city council meetings, something my mother greatly appreciates, and televises other critical city meetings and projects, which help keep city Portland government open and transparent to all citizens and encourages civic participation and dialogue. In addition to their work with local governments, PCM provides youth media and technology education to underserved youth in after-school programs and a summer media education for at-risk youth. So it's my pleasure to introduce their contract for their continued good services, contract between the city and PCM. To provide more information are Mary Beth Henry of the city's cable office, Carl Kucharski, executive director of PCM, and Jeff Bessonette, president of the board of PCM. Mary Beth.
Thank you, Commissioner Saltzman. Mary Beth Henry with the cable office. I'd like to echo Commissioner Saltzman's words that the cable office is very pleased to recommend this agreement with PCM. It's through Portland Community Media that citizens of Portland produce community television, including news, current events, community affairs, religious programming, entertainment, and cultural events. And in this era of media consolidation, where much of the media is owned or controlled by just a few entities, PCM represents a breath of fresh local air. Portland Community Media isn't owned by any corporate entity. It's really owned, in essence, by the citizens of Portland. I'd argue that in today's world of concentrated media ownership, their mission is even more important than it was 26 years ago. The mission is to promote broad participation in civic and cultural life by encouraging effective use and understanding of community media. Democracy is premised on giving people enough information so they will generally make intelligent decisions for the good of the community. PCM contributes by providing an electronic public space for the community to share information and become informed. Let's look at some of the numbers from the past 5 years. More than 2,500 citizens of Portland have participated in PCM's media education programs. Through PCM, more than 27,000 programs have been produced for cable television. And over the past 5 years, PCM has raised more than $1.1 million outside of the monies provided by the City of Portland. PCM was selected as one of six sites in the nation to establish a web-based youth digital distribution network to expand services to young people. The agreement is for 4 years and represents an initial budget of just under $800,000. I'd be happy to answer questions now or after the other presentations.
We'll handle them afterwards.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. As Board President of Portland Community Media, I'd also like to express our thanks to Commissioner Saltzman and his staff, the entire City Council, the Mount Hood Cable Regulatory Commission, and the staff of the Office of Cable Communications and Franchise Management for your support and partnership that has enabled Portland Community Media to serve the City of Portland for the past 26 years. We are looking forward to the coming contract period, which will be an exciting time for PCM. During this period, we will be implementing a project we're calling Access 2.0, a new technology project to provide the community with a rich variety of options for creating and distributing media, including web video, video on demand, streaming video, blogs, and video podcasts. We will continue working with the wide diversity of communities and neighborhoods within our city, and we'll expand training in digital storytelling to preserve and share the rich and vibrant stories that comprise our community. We'll also be expanding services for nonprofit, community-based, and grassroots organizations, particularly those that would not otherwise have access to media. And of course, since we are now living with a generation of young people that is the first to grow up digital, PCM will continue to expand our youth media education programs that we call OLLIE and Adventures in Television, with a focus on Portland's underserved youth. Again, we thank you very much for your support, and we look forward to the next 4 years.
Good morning. It's good to be here. I'm Carl Kucharski. I'm the Executive Director of Portland Community Media. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank all of the thousands of volunteers and community members who have enabled PCM to serve the city for the past 25, 26 years, from the founders who came up with the crazy idea of putting media in the hands of everyday people, to the volunteers who help bring you community events such as the Rose Festival Junior Parade and the Martin Luther King Day Junior events, and the volunteer community producers who create the thousands of hours of new community programs each year. I also want to extend a sincere thanks to the many people who have dedicated so much time and energy to serving on the board of directors. A special thanks to Jeff Bissonnette, our current board chair. Over the next 4 years, we will continue to focus on PCM's mission to promote broad participation in civic and cultural life by encouraging effective use and understanding of community media. We look forward to our continued partnership with the City Council and the people of the City of Portland, helping to strengthen our community, promote civic engagement, and to provide a voice for all people in our community. Thank you.
Thank you, folks. Questions from the commissioners?
If that's it in terms of invited panel, but I don't know if there's other members of the public here that wish to speak.
Do we have a sign-up sheet for that, Ms. Carla?
Probably. I'm going to check on that right now.
We have a sign-up sheet, Carla.
We did. No one signed up.
Okay. Please call the vote.
Adams?
Happy to vote aye.
Leonard?
Yes, and I'm very proud of our cable system. I watch it often and participate occasionally. Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, I'm proud to support this. I'm sure Commissioner Leonard's thrilled to learn about your Media Access 2.0
yes,
and all those new capabilities that he can take advantage of. But no, you do a great job, and really appreciate your at-risk youth programs and the good coverage that you provide of many important public events. It's a great service, and I just also wanted to thank those who worked on this contract from the city besides Mary Beth. I wanted to thank Julie Olmachek and Ben Walters, and then Shannon Callahan in my office as well. So please vote aye.
Potter.
What I appreciate about PCM, besides allowing citizens access to government, is your can-do attitude. Often when we have a community meeting or we need a remote location, you folks are always there. They're always pleasant. They're always helpful. And that's truly appreciated. And so I think you folks do a tremendous service to our community, and I'm very proud to vote aye. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Please read the 10 a.m. time certain.
Item 792, authorize an intergovernmental agreement with the State of Oregon for placement of the new city archives on Portland State University campus.
Good morning, members of council. Gary Blackmer, Portland City Auditor, and with me is Lindsay DeRochet, Vice President at Portland State University. Let me give you a quick little background of how we got to this point today, and then turn it over to Lindsay to talk about her perspective from Portland State University, and then we can go back and talk through the details of the two items on the agenda before you. When I first got elected to office 8 years ago, my staff warned me that we were going to be running out of space. Our archive center out on Columbia Boulevard was over 90% full, and we went through a lot of efforts to compress the storage, to make it last as long as we could, but it was clear that it was an inevitable tide of documents that state law required us to retain that we needed to deal with. The City Council approved money in the current year's budget last year's budget to review our needs and develop a proposal for how to deal with our facility. As we were looking at that proposal, we approached Portland State literally in late February, and they were in the midst of building a new building, planning on it. And so it was a space that would work for us as well. And so this has been a little over 4 months that has been kind of a quick scramble on the part of the city as well as Portland State. But I think what we have before you is a great proposal for an opportunity not only for the city of Portland and Portland State, but the students and researchers and the general public in making the 156 years of records that the city has done a great job of caring for, making those available to the public. I don't know a lot about real estate, but people tell me location, location, location is important. And we are extremely fortunate to have a location like this. It provides the kind of access that we never had for our record center before. So to that, I appreciate all the hard work that the staff in the city, Jim Coker, Linda Law, Andrew Scott, and their bosses have put in to get us to this point, and all the people at Portland State that have helped Lindsay put this together on their behalf. So let me turn it over to Lindsay, and she can talk a bit, and then we'll get to the details.
And I won't talk too much, but I do want to start by thanking the mayor and Mr. Adams in particular regarding not this, but our higher education budget. I just have to take this opportunity to say that it was an amazing year for us in higher education in this state, and to have the advocacy coming from the city of Portland, not just on this, but on the overall needs for higher education really, really helped. And we are all feeling a little optimistic now that things are, the tide is turning, and thank you very much for that time that you took. But on this, I want to say, well, it's a very good day because I can report to you that Portland State and the City of Portland, working together over just about 4 months to bring to fruition this really important and excellent partnership, it's going to benefit everyone, students, faculty at Portland State, and also, of course, the citizens of Portland. And it demonstrates that when we want to work together, the university and the city, it can be done, and it can be done in short order, too. We can work very effectively together, and I'm most proud, really, of the accomplishment here. When Gary came to us, to President Bernstein, emeritus now, just a few months ago, and said it would be a good idea to locate on the archives on the campus, it was not yet known how in the heck we could accomplish that. And then when Randy Leonard, with visionary leadership, said, I like this idea, let's make this work, and then I had to sit down and assess our options. Well, where the heck can we do this? It became clear, though, that we could do it. And we just sat down and walked through it and figured it out and said, well, we're on a fast track on this building, but we can make it work. We can accomplish it. And this is what we have done. And really, with the good services of your staff in this city, and I think city staff, just like university staff, don't always get enough credit for the good work that they do. Tom Feely and his people, Linda Law, Jim Coker, Andrew Scott, Diana Hokola, and Eric Johansson, a number of others have just really put their hearts into this and recognized that it was a good opportunity for us all, and they have served you well in this process. Because the state of Oregon also stepped up, again, due to the advocacy of this council and the mayor, the state of Oregon stepped up, we will be able to add our School of Social Work to this project, which I am very, very happy for, because it's a very important service school for the state of Oregon and the city. And we need a permanent home for it, so they will be on the sixth floor. And I think that, you know, we have achieved all the goals that we sought to achieve with this facility for both the city and for the university. So that's a good outcome. With the addition of the archives, our faculty and students are going to use these documents. This is going to be an active historical research center, and I think we don't even know how good it's going to be for everyone. And, of course, these records will be available to people because it will be on the transit mall, easy access, very prominent. Again, we can't really predict what all of that will mean in the long run. But just to say thank you for it, I think this is a fine example of knowledge does serve the city, and hopefully we've taken a major step in the direction to achieve that. And I just want to end again by saying thank you to the staff, especially Gary. He's a gentleman and an excellent person to work with. And his staff, Diane Banning, and also, finally, don't want to exclude Dan Bates, who did some very good service for us in the trenches in Salem on this project. So thank you. And we're ready for any questions.
Before you, you have two items. One is intergovernmental agreement with Portland State, and the other is the authority to raise up to $12 million in bonds. And I can kind of walk through those a little together.
We probably should read item 793 into the record. That's the second.
Authorize revenue bonds to finance cost of archive space.
The intergovernmental agreement is a agreement that we work through with Portland State that identifies roles and responsibilities for the process of building the site. And that covers everything up to the point of completion. What's attached to that is a condominium agreement, which takes effect after we take possession of the archive center. So those two are key elements of how this relationship will go in the next couple years and then far into the future. And from our standpoint, we feel really satisfied that we have reached a real clear understanding of our roles and relationships there, that this has been an intense process with attorneys going through and making sure that contingencies and eventualities are all addressed in a way that satisfies both parties. So from my way of thinking, this has been a quick and challenging labor that I've watched and appreciated. The project's bonding authority, $12 million. This covers the costs of the construction of the Archive Center, as well as all the costs the city would undergo in order to get into that center and operate. The city, I know council's interested in confidence on the estimates. Mm-hmm. Let me break the cost down into two elements. Portland State has a cost of $9,871,436 to provide us with the facility we need to operate our archive center. We have very high confidence in that number. Because of the design build process, that number is a fixed number from our perspective. So we feel like the majority of the costs are covered and anticipated. And that's where we focused the majority of our efforts in terms of looking at the facility, making sure that what the architects are designing meets the needs of our storage and access. So that's been the largest attention for us. The other part of it is simply getting us into that facility. There are things that the city needs to take responsibility for, like the cost of moving. We're able to reuse our storage shelves, but we need to seismically upgrade those. So that'll take extra work. Hooking up to the city's ERNIE adds extra costs. We have a 2% for art instead of the state's 1% for art, so there's additional money in for that. So that comes up to about $1,765,813 as of the date that we put this together for council. We know there's going to be a few other costs that go up. For example, one of the issues that we're looking at is the LEED designation. One of the high energy costs of our facility is to control humidity to preserve the records. And that is something we're working with the Office of Sustainable Development on to see if there are some costs, what the costs would be and the benefits of looking at a more energy efficient solution, if there are any out there to install. We need to pay for an expert to help us with that, and there may be some additional costs, but they could be paid for long-term in terms of energy savings. So just because this has been a four-month project, some of those pieces take a little longer for us when we get down to the end of it to determine. Our sense is those are not going to be large costs. the $12 million that we were asking for in bond authority will be sufficient. But we would like to come back to council in a few months with a firm number on that other part of it as well. So once we've worked through the final pieces of our issues with this new facility, we can come back with, I think, you know, through the budget modification process, the final number on what we anticipate our expenditures to be.
Well, Gary, this building will be LEED Silver at a minimum, correct?
Yes, correct.
That's and policy.
What we'd like to do is see if we're the only thing keeping it from going to the next level, what it would take to get there. Because if we're close and it's a matter of the city doing a little more to get there, we'd certainly like to contribute our extra energies to get there.
And I'll just say that on the LEED Silver, the contract that we have with Skanska USA includes the provision that it will be LEED Silver.
Certified.
At a minimum.
Certified LEED Silver.
Yes. Yes, certified.
Mm-hmm. In terms of the policy that we've established for cost estimates, where does this fall under the confidence level?
The largest part, the $9.8 million, is high confidence. The $1.765 is low confidence. And I don't want to. My sense is we've got high confidence we can stay within the $12 million. We have some contingency built in the $1.7 million, but we also know that there'll be some things that we just look at and have to put a little extra in.
Is this do you have a contractor? Is this a design-build approach?
Or yes. Yes, it is.
Build? Mm-hmm. Any of you mm-hmm. selected a contractor for the whole development?
Yes.
Who
yes.
is it?
Skanska USA. And the architect that is working on under contract with Skanska is Joost Grubhal.
And you chose them in part, I assume, based on their ability to deliver projects on time, on budget?
You bet. Yes. It's a very important, the scheduling of this project is one of the very most important things given the light rail construction.
Mm-hmm. And is there, given the nature of this investment within a larger building, mm-hmm. You feel confident that if the larger building goes over budget, that we're protected in terms of our maximum contribution?
Right. There is that's what the intergovernmental agreement does, is it says you will deliver this structure at this price. And so Portland State essentially is at risk through its contractors at risk to deliver that at right. that point, at that price.
Yes, and we agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Other questions? Okay, on item 792, please call the vote.
There was nobody else signed up, just for the record, for testimony.
Okay, thank you.
Adams?
Yes, it is an emergency vote.
Well, I want to thank you for the good work and all the due diligence.
Thank
and
you.
It was my pleasure to advocate for funding that helps this project and other projects. And I was really worried up until the very last minutes that we would be collectively unsuccessful. So thank you for all the work that you and your team did. It was, I think, some of the best coordinated lobbying led by PSU I've seen down there in the many years that I've been around the state legislature. So Jesse and the whole crew.
Thank you. Job. I'll relate that to each and every one of them.
It was really good. Also want to acknowledge Commissioner Leonard, whose advocacy on behalf of making these this information and these records more transparent and available, I think, is the very essence of having an accountable government. And for policymakers like us, I think it's going to be very valuable having it so close that we can actually use it and our staffs will be able to use it. We didn't just get to be a great city and we didn't come to the set of problems that we have overnight, and having access to more of the history of all that, I think, is going to make a tangible benefit on our governance of the city. So thank you for your leadership. Aye.
Leonard?
I want to make sure before I say anything else, acknowledge all of the people that I'm aware of that were directly involved in this. I read every email, although I didn't often weigh in between what was going on back and forth. Unless I needed to, I was very carefully monitoring how we were developing the agreement. And was very impressed. So, Lindsay, you did an outstanding job.
Thank you.
You were accessible, available, flexible, and all the things that had to happen for us to have two governments come together this quickly. I've never seen anything happen this quick in government before.
Thank you.
Of course, Tom Feely, who's here, was the first person I talked to on our side, and he, whatever Tom did, he certainly sent the message out that this is something that has to happen. And from my experience, his involvement forward really got the folks that were key focused in on this was a project that needed to get done as quickly as possible, and certainly it didn't. And of course, Jim Coker, Linda Law did a lot of work. I read a lot of what she was recommending and suggesting, and appreciated her work. And of course, Andrew Scott and Eric Johansson, I hope I don't mispronounce some of these names. From memory, I was trying to write them down. Of course, Diane Hoclaw from Gary's office was an excellent source of information. And Dan Bates, too. I mean, I was very impressed with the whole. I'm sorry that some of our lobbyists have left, because I've either served as a staff member or a lobbyist or a member of the legislature for 33 years, and I've never seen as good a city team as we had this time advocating. So it's really nice to have heard a couple times today that feedback, because my own experience was that. And of course, last but not least, is Ty Kovach, who is the can-do guy in my office, who really helped break through a lot of the traditional barriers to get this thing on the fast track. And if I needed any reminding of how important it was for us, you know, each generation to make sure we preserve what we think and do for future generations, I was exposed to that recently in Rome, and was just absolutely struck and thought a lot about this project in the context of obviously what many think is the cradle of Western civilization that is encapsulated oftentimes in archives and accessible by scholars in archives. And this act today, I think, really does that, maybe not on the scale of Rome, but certainly on the scale that is important to our citizens and even to our state, make accessible the records of not just this current council and the current mayor, but prior mayors, prior councils, prior auditors, pictures, historical pictures. I mean, I don't think people quite understand what they're going to get for this agreement until the doors open, and I do, and I'm excited about it. And as I told Gary, when my service is done here, I hope he'd consider hiring me as a part-time person out front to check in and out computers for people. That would be nothing more that I would enjoy than doing that. And so I'm really, really excited about this and pleased with the great cooperative spirit. We often talk about partnering, and especially with Portland State. I don't know of another example that is as good as this one of partnering with Portland State, which I obviously consider to be a gem in our community. And this just really puts an exclamation point behind that for both of our entities, and I'm really, really pleased with it. So thank you for all the work, and thanks everybody for the great work they did. It was really exemplary. Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, this is a great, great arrangement here, and I really appreciate Auditor Blackmer, Commissioner Leonard, Portland State University, and all the staff making this happen so quickly. It was just one of those great ideas that came along at the right time, and you know, maybe not quite enough time, but you pulled it off, and But I do think it will serve our citizens and your students very well in the future to have this, our archives, in a location that's more accessible to everybody. And I think that will really increase the learning and knowledge of about the city and about the rich history we have. So good work. Aye.
Potter.
And I'm very pleased that the city will have a state-of-the-art archives system, because as a history buff, I can say that I'm very interested in Portland's history, and after my retirement in 20 years, I intend to go out and
use the records.
I intend to spend a lot of time up there checking that out. So anyway,
work up there with me.
Oh, yes. Wouldn't that be fun?
That would be fun. Yeah. Have a great time.
But anyway, thank you, folks, for and all the people who worked on this. This was a labor of love that had a lot of support, both from on the city council as well as in the community, as well at Portland State. And we appreciate the opportunity to be, once again, to be a good partner with PSU. So I vote aye.
Thank you. And I just would like to add one final comment. There's a really excellent person in my office who I need to acknowledge who has coordinated all of this, and that's Mr. Mark Gregory. I don't know if Mark is, where is he? Right there. He is, he's, with all of those staff people from the city did an excellent job for us. So I want to acknowledge him.
Thank you. And thank you for all your support, especially Commissioner Leonard.
As to item 793, it's a non-emergency and moves to a second reading. When would that second reading be?
Next Wednesday, July 18th.
Thank you. We'll now move to the regular agenda. Please read item 831.
Pay claim of Blue Dieter.
Great name.
Good morning, Mayor Potter, Commissioners. Randy Stenquist, City Risk Management. Approval of this ordinance will resolve the injury claim presented by Blue Dieter, who was involved in a motor vehicle accident with a Portland police officer approximately a year ago. Last July 31st, young Mr. Dieter, who was 17 at the time, had held his driving license for all of 6 days, and this was one of the first times he had been behind the wheel of the family car on his own. And on this morning, he was struck by a police officer turning left into oncoming traffic. They both were at a stop sign in southeast Portland. Intersection is a bit oddly configured in that it's a bit offset, but Mr. Dieter had the right-of-way and did absolutely nothing wrong in this accident. The Portland police officer acknowledged that she simply did not see him before she turned left into the car. The vehicle, the family car, was demolished. We settled the property damage claim some time ago. As a result of the accident, Mr. Dieter saw his doctor several times at Kaiser, embarked upon a multi-month course of chiropractic treatment, and racked up some $5,700 approximately in medical bills. The settlement of this claim will pay all of those medical bills that have been covered so far by his automobile insurance carrier. We will reimburse them, and then the remainder of the payment goes to Mr. Dieter for the pain, suffering, trauma, aggravation of this injury. And I will add, it was a traumatic event for a new driver. He carried around a lot of questions and feelings of culpability in this accident, even though it was clear that he did nothing wrong. So.
Questions? Did we have a sign-up sheet?
I did not.
Okay. Anybody here who wish to speak to this matter? It's emergency vote. Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Thank you. Thank you. Please read item 832.
Authorize interim financing of new owner-occupied first mortgages.
Well, thank you, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. Actually, the next item as well is related to this ordinance.
Could you read item 833? Mm-hmm.
Authorize an interagency agreement with the Portland Development Commission to administer the city's home ownership revolving line of credit.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. Eric Johansson, debt manager in the Office of Management and Finance. Both of these ordinances are related to Operation Home, the city's initiative to eliminate Portland's minority homeownership gap. You may recall during the budget discussions this past year, PDC proposed an expansion of their first mortgage lending activity, especially to target Portland's underserved markets. Following these budget discussions, the council and commission both included funding for this expanded program in their 07-08 budgets. In summary, PDC's lending program funds new first mortgages and then immediately packages and submits those loans for purchase by either the State of Oregon Housing Program or by Fannie Mae. The typical holding period for PDC-originated loans is a matter of weeks, as the takeout by the state or Fannie Mae is a very streamlined and automated process that PDC is quite familiar with. This proposed revolving line of credit authorized by the ordinance before you today will provide PDC with access to additional funding to allow the expanded program. Funds will be drawn from the line of credit to fund loans and then these draws will be repaid at the time that the mortgages are sold to the state or to Fannie Mae. The repaid funds will then go back in and be available to make additional loans through the program. After discussions with the local banks that would be potential line of credit providers, it was determined that securing the line of credit with the city's full faith and credit would provide a substantial interest rate benefit both to the city and to PDC, and therefore the ordinance contemplates the use of this city's full faith and credit. But in order to protect the city's credit, PDC has agreed to maintain a $200,000 reserve against the line of credit. OMF believes that the underwriting criteria used by PDC to qualify loans is sufficiently strong to minimize the possibility of a loan not being purchased by investors. Nonetheless, the $200,000 does provide an additional level of comfort to the city and minimizes risk to the general fund. With that, OMF does recommend approval of the ordinance and establishment of the home ownership line of credit. The second ordinance is simply the interagency agreement that would authorize and govern the operation of the program, discusses the various roles and responsibilities of both PDC and the city in implementing the program, and also there we would support approval of that ordinance as well. Happy to answer any questions.
Questions from the commissioners? Thank you. Is there a sign-up sheet for testimony?
There was for both, and no one signed up.
Is there anybody here who wishes to speak to this issue? Well, I want to say how much this will mean to the community in terms of providing opportunity for more home ownership for minorities. This has been an issue with the Operation Home, which Commissioner Sten and I co-chair, to try to increase home ownership in the city of Portland. African Americans, for instance, have home ownership at a rate of about 39% as opposed to whites at 61%. So there is a gap, and we want to do all we can to help close that, and this is one of the tools that we're going to use to do that with. So thank you very much. And I also want to thank Ken and Eric from the city's Public Finance and Treasury Division for their cooperation in making that line of credit a reality. Thank you. Both of these are non-emergencies and moves to a second reading.
Next week.
Next week. Please read item 834.
Authorize revenue bonds to finance cost of improvements to Portland International Raceway.
I'm back. For the record, Eric Johansson, debt manager in the Office of Management and Finance. This proposed ordinance authorizes the issuance of up to $2,050,000 in bonds to finance cost of improvements to Portland International Raceway. You may recall that 2 weeks ago on June 27th, Council approved Ordinance 181097, authorizing a contract for the construction of PIR track repairs and improvements. The proposed ordinance will provide financing for the cost of these improvements. It's expected that the bonds will be repaid over a period of 10 years from the net operating revenues of PIR. Annual debt service of approximately $260,000 per year is expected to be repaid from the revenues of PIR. In addition, the bonds are proposed to be additionally secured by the city's full faith and credit. OMF has discussed with Parks Bureau staff that in the event that PIR revenues are not sufficient to repay the bonds, that the Parks Bureau will be expected to fund the shortfall out of its budget. And prior to issuing the bonds, OMF will request that the Parks Bureau formally acknowledge this understanding. This kind of credit support agreement is similar to previous agreements between OMF and benefiting city bureaus, whereby the bureaus acknowledge their responsibility for the debt obligation in exchange for receiving the interest rate benefits to come from having the obligation secured by the city's full faith and credit. OMF recommends approval of the ordinance.
Is there any sign up for testimony?
I did not.
Is there anybody here who wishes to speak to this issue? This is a non-emergency and moves to a second reading for next week.
Yes.
Thank you. Please read item 835.
Authorize a letter of agreement between the city and the District Council of Trade Unions for terms and conditions of employment of certain employees in the Bureau of Environmental Services assigned to perform inspection work inside of the East Side Combined Sewer Overflow Tunnel during its construction.
Morning, Mayor Potter, Council Members. Patrick Ward, Labor Relations Coordinator with the Bureau of Human Resources. This letter of agreement was made at the request of the Bureau of Environmental Services to provide a premium to public works inspectors and senior inspectors when they train and work on the East Side Combined Sewer Overflow Project. It is for the work conditions that are inherent in working in the tunnel.
Questions from the commissioners? Is there anyone signed up to testify on this matter?
I did not have a sign-up sheet.
This issue didn't arise during the West Side Tunnel?
The inspection work done on the West Side Tunnel was done by contract inspectors. This is the first time that city employees will be doing inspection work on the tunnel. As stated in the letter of agreement, this is very specialized work, and it's only the second time it's done in North America, the first being on the West Side.
Other questions? It's an emergency vote. Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read item 836.
Accept bid of Payne Construction, Inc. for the city property warehouse tenant improvements for $1,631,362.
Good morning, Mayor Potter, members of City Council. For the record, I'm Jeff Baer. I'm the director of the Bureau of Purchases. And before you is the request to approve a contract with Payne Construction for the city property warehouse tenant improvements project in the amount of $1,631,362. And just to highlight a couple of portions of this contract, we actually identified a little over $810,000 in subcontract awards, of which 53.1% of that is awarded to minority women and emerging small businesses. So one of the good council reports that I have that helps balance our annual reporting contracting out for MWSB participation, and they are in compliance with the Equal Benefits Program. We have a representative here that can address any project-specific questions you might have.
Questions?
Go ahead. I'm not quite sure where this is. This the police evidence warehouse, or what are we talking about?
Maybe I'll have Stephen Keller come up. I think it is, but I just want to make sure.
Mr. Mayor, City Council, I'm Stephen Keller, project manager for the Office of Management and Finance, and I'm managing this project. It is the police property warehouse, which is going to be relocated at the Giles Lake.
And will this remodel meet city lead standard gold?
Actually, because it's a tenant improvement, it will fall under the G-rated guide, so it will be G-rated.
Okay, thanks.
As a report, I need a motion to accept.
So move.
Second.
Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read item 837.
Apply for an $858,055 Justice Assistance Grant from the Bureau of Justice Assistance, Office of Justice Programs to reduce crime and improve public safety.
Have staff here to discuss this. This is the process of applying for a grant. It will be going to the Police Bureau to provide support for personnel, equipment, and training. Any questions on this from the commissioners? Anybody sign up to testify on this matter?
I did not have a sign-up sheet for this.
Is there anybody here who wishes to testify to this matter? It's a non-emergency and moves to a second reading. Please read item 838.
Authorize the city attorney to appeal a final opinion and order in Thunderbird Hotels, LLC versus City of Portland and Jensen Dynamic Corporation versus City of Portland.
Commissioner Adams?
Catherine, if you want to make a few introductory remarks and consideration.
Good morning, Catherine Beaumont, City Attorney's Office. As you know, we recently received a ruling from the Land Use Board of Appeals concerning the moratorium the council adopted for Hayden Island. LUBA sustained the council's actions, sustained the basis for the council's imposition of the moratorium, but concluded that at least one of our exemptions was faulty. We have researched whether there's a valid basis to appeal. We believe there is, and we are seeking your authority to appeal Lupa's decision to the Court of Appeals.
Questions from the commissioners? Is there anyone signed up to testify on this matter?
We have one person signed up, Walter Valenta.
Hi, Walter Valenta. I'm on the Columbia River Crossing Task Force and a local resident. I'm here to have you support appealing this to the next level, but I really am here to kind of put a context on this because I want to make sure we're always are keeping the biggest picture of what's going on with the CRC here. By the end of this year, the staff will have made a recommendation of their locally preferred alternative. This project is moving along. On the Vancouver side, their council is very engaged in this. Their enhancement packages are kind of picked out. There's drawings of caps over their freeway, how their new road system's being worked out, how it's integrating with their new development. It's all being worked into the project as though it's a funded fee. But on the Portland side, we're not getting that same level of attention. The enhancements that we would like to get on Hayden Island, maybe the arterial connection that's needed that could be part of the light rail, how it really works with Hayden Island, we're kind of getting shoved aside. Now, remember that this is really a Washington project that we're tagging along on. And so I talked to staff a lot about why is that? And the reason that they're saying is there's this feeling in the staff that this is really not that important of a project to the city council. It's important to Sam, it's important to Rex, but they're not getting the same level of intention in this. The CRC briefs the Vancouver City Council every 2 weeks, I've been told. They're that engaged in this. And we've been kind of watching it from the side. And as we get now to this thing, like we're closing down, they're trying to make decisions, and we're just kind of getting our act together on the Hayden Island plan and doing these things. So I'm kind of here to hopefully let you know that we as a group, a city council, needs to let them know that we have things that we want on our side of the river too. This is a chance of a generation to transform Marine Drive, the Expo Center, Hayden Island, into quite a wonderful place. And right now they're at the part of the project where they're trying to have it cost less and push off. They don't want to absorb any more parts of this. But meanwhile, on the Vancouver side, they're absorbing costs. Now, it is their downtown, so there are some differences there. So I'd like, as we go through this, that we have a little more connection with each of you. And I'm going to reach out to each of you so that we can start to get some of these enhancements that need to be part of this project. As the budget starts to crunch, there's less willingness, for instance, like on the Columbia River widening where they had quite an enhancement package. There's posturing that they're not going to do that on this project. You know, remember, this is a Washington philosophical project that ODOT is, these are my opinions, tagging along on. And so it's kind of, I want us to not let this slip and have each of you jump in a little bit more deep and have the council speak as a loud voice. Sam's doing a great job, and Rex is doing a great job. Same message to Metro Council, too. We need to be really at the plate as a whole region and a city at this. Thank you.
Thanks, Walter. The council looks to me for sort of direction and advice in terms of when to jump in and how to jump in. And so I'll definitely have conversations with you about trying to get them more involved. I will say that they've been very supportive of with this moratorium, I think, is just one expression. They've been very supportive of making sure that that the Oregon part of this project is as robust and meets all the needs that we have on this side of the river. So it maybe isn't evident publicly, but I can tell you behind the scenes they've been very supportive of my work, and it's up to me to give them sort of advice on how to get involved.
there's a staff perception that it's more you, and maybe that's how Portland runs. So I want to broaden that to have it be more that, you know, that we're demonstrating to the staff that there is that deeper, full council commitment to tracking this.
I'll work with you on that because the council is very interested and engaged, and under a commission form of government, which is not what they have on the Washington side, I'm the one that's the point person on transportation.
Good. Thank you.
Further discussion? It's a resolution. Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Seltzman?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read 839.
Create a local improvement district to construct street improvements east of Mallory Avenue in the Northeast Winchell Street Local Improvement District.
Commissioner Adams?
Andrew.
Good morning, council members. Andrew Abbey, Local Improvement District Administrator. And council initiated this the LID formation proceedings on May 23rd, and before you, you have an LID formation ordinance for your consideration. Joining me today are Wayne Alderman and Rick DeLand of the Portland Police Bureau's Northeast Precinct. They are filling in for Sergeant Matt Engen, who is on a well-deserved vacation, whom you saw on May 23rd. And Roseanne Lee from the Office of Neighborhood Involvement is joining us as well, and they'd like to share a few thoughts with you. I've greatly appreciated the opportunity to partner with the Portland Police Bureau as well as the Office of Neighborhood Involvement and the three property owners on this project. Just to recap from May 23rd, Northeast Winchell Street, east of Mallory Avenue, is in very poor condition. It's a gravel street in a commercial area. So attempting to maintain the street by grading and graveling it, which is the responsibility of all three abutting property owners, is not an effective long-term solution, or for that matter, an effective short-term solution to maintaining the street when you, given the usage of the street. Given the drainage of the area, among other issues, it would also be difficult and certainly not cost-effective to try to build this street piecemeal, one at a time by each property owner, in lieu of building it via the local improvement district and taking care of the entire unimproved frontage all at once with the LID. This street will benefit all three property owners if council approves the LID, and based on the feedback that we received at a property owner meeting that we held after the May 23rd council session, we are planning to construct driveways for all three properties so that all of them can access the street. We're also looking at, we're also intending to make some parking changes on Mallory Avenue, and we believe that a lot of the truck parking that currently is happening on Northeast Winchell Street will shift over to Mallory, and Mallory will become a better entrance point for the trucks that you see on the street, which will free up more of Winchell Street for parking by the Exotica International Club for Men business, as well as for Meadow Sweet Farms. We did receive one remonstrance by last week's filing deadline. The remonstrance represents 14.5% of the estimated cost of the LID project and is well below the 60% threshold by charter, at which point council would lose jurisdiction to form the LID. That remonstrance is in Exhibit F before you. The remonstrance was received from Meadow Sweet Farms. They are here to speak to you today. Following the May 23rd council hearing, I analyzed the effects of a discussion that we had, which was to blend the current abutting linear footage assessment methodology with a square footage assessment methodology, and communicated the effects of that to the three property owners. The result of that would have been to increase Kraft Foods assessment by $72,087.28, while decreasing the assessment primarily on the Exotica property by $43,527.42, and to a lesser extent on the Meadow Sweet Farms property in the amount of $28,559.86. Kraft Foods would have been the only property owner adversely affected by this potential change. The benefit would have gone to Exotica and to Meadow Sweet Farms. We did receive correspondence from Kraft in the form of a contingent remonstrance that said that they would not be supportive of this change. I have not prepared an amendment for council consideration to make this change because the Kraft contingent remonstrance would defeat formation of the LID by city charter. I would just note that even without a change to the assessment methodology, Kraft does have a majority of the cost of the LID, just under 64%, with an estimated assessment of $294,000. They are under their own cost pressures. They are in a very competitive, low margin, and slow growing business, the grocery business. And they've indicated to me that they want to keep their Portland bakery cost competitive with their manufacturing facilities in Atlanta, Georgia, Richmond, Virginia, Chicago, Illinois, Canada, and Mexico, and have therefore declined to accept the additional $72,000 assessment. Therefore, my respectful recommendation to council is to overrule the remonstrance and approve this ordinance at the second reading. If council approves this project, PDOT is intending to get started on the project soon, and we will certainly endeavor to minimize cost to the extent possible for all property owners in the LID. Just in closing, I want to note that the three businesses with whom I worked are very, very diverse businesses, and I really want to thank them all for their participation in the multiple property owner meetings that we held. I know Meadowsweet Farm drove down from Kent, Washington to be part of the discussion, and we got a lot of good issues out on the table, and if we move forward with the LID, I'm confident that the design of the project will be significantly enhanced as a result of the participation by all the property owners. With that, if you don't have any questions, I'll turn it over to my peers in the Police Bureau and the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Potter and the Council. My name is Officer Rick DeLand with the Portland Police Bureau. I'm currently assigned to Northeast Precinct Neighborhood Response Team. Myself and Officer Wayne Alderman, who's the crime analyst for Northeast Precinct, are appearing on behalf of Sergeant Matt Engen, who's been working on this project from the beginning and unfortunately was not able to attend today. Sergeant Engen testified before the council on May 23rd. That statement is on the record and I believe gives clear support and evidence for that support in moving this process forward. In addition to that, I provided a memo sent to the council dated May 10th from Commander Brett Smith, the Northeast Precinct, delineating the benefits from a law enforcement perspective that this process would bring. In short, we're here today to reaffirm our strong support for moving this process forward and to answer any questions that have arisen since prior testimony. Thank you.
Probably should have taken that offer of the other chair in the beginning. My name is Roseanne Lee. Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners. I'm here today filling in for my colleague, Celeste Carey, who's in a training with other metro area crime prevention practitioners this morning and couldn't be here. But I'm also here as a member of the Office of Neighborhood Involvement Crime Prevention through Environmental Design Committee to state our support for the Winchell Street LID improvements. Winchell Street is a good example of livability and criminal activity issues commonly found in areas of our city that are unimproved roads without curbing, sidewalks, or lighting, and where the lines between public and private property are blurred. Where there are not clearly defined boundaries between the public and private domain, a perception of lack of ownership or no man's land is created. This lack of territoriality, which is a main component in effective SEPTED practice, coupled with the fact that Winchell Street is dark and secluded at night, creates a perfect environment for crimes to occur, and they do. The previous council testimony by the staff of Exotica, Sergeant Engen, the letter from Commander Smith, and the memo from my colleague Celeste Carey, which you should have in front of you, demonstrate that this is indeed the situation existing on Winchell Street. Improving the street, adding curbs, sidewalks, and lighting will help to meet the SEPTED goal of territoriality and also contribute to controlling the access to and from the Exotica property. Providing clear and distinct property lines and a street that is well lit sends a message of people care about this area and you run the risk of being caught. It also enables the Portland Police Bureau, other City of Portland agencies such as parking enforcement and property owners to effectively enforce the appropriate laws and ordinances to address crime and livability issues. The current owner of Exotica has shown interest and enthusiasm in cooperating with police and crime prevention to address the boundary issues via the LID process. They have taken some temporary measures to define the boundary of their parking lot. However, there's no guarantee that this cooperation would continue in the future, whether due to a change